Welcome to Conscious Curiosity SD, where successful San Diego leaders share their stories of leading beyond profit and are using the influence of business to positively change the companies and communities we all work and live in. I'm your host, Jeff Blanton from Jailbreak Leadership, a proven and powerful process for unlocking the full potential of the people and teams across your organization, giving you the competitive advantage in the marketplace. We want to thank our collaborative community of business organizations, the Better Business Bureau, Conscious Capitalism, Business for Good, Cause San Diego, and Be Local. We're all focused on impacting our community of San Diego through the work they do as business leaders. Welcome to the show. Today's guest on Conscious Curiosity SD is someone who lives and breathes connection. Audrey Jacobs, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me, Jeff.
Audrey is passionate about building tribes and creating spaces where people can come together to grow, collaborate, and spark change. Her personal mission says it all, to be a catalyst for positive change by educating and inspiring individuals and communities. She's a master matchmaker, bringing the right people together to ignite ideas, movements, and opportunities. She's a principal owner of Mindful Maven Consulting, the chief connector and curator for TEDx San Diego, and a freelance writer. For that, she was a founding partner at Our Crowd, the Israel-based global startup investment platform. Under her leadership, Our Crowd built a strong presence across Americas, raising over $250 million in investing in breakthrough Israeli innovations. Audrey, you've been busy.
I have been busy. And I also raised three sons. I've got one left, 17, at San Diego High School.
All right. That's a whole project in itself right there.
Oh, I would say at this point, they're pretty grown and I'm pretty hopeful.
So, yeah, exactly.
Now they're good boys.
Thank God. Got them launched. All boys. Eh?
Yeah. Three boys. Yeah, absolutely. Oh. God knew I would not be a good girl mom.
Yeah. So. There's a big difference, I think, between girl moms and boy moms.
Yeah. 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 I'm too tough. So.
Yeah. Boy moms have to, they toughen up over time for sure. Well, I'm very excited to talk about this whole matchmaking idea. And even the mission I just described, you came up with that when you were 17 years old, yeah?
Yes,
so you've been walking out your mission your whole life. That's amazing.
I grew up in Texas, and I think if you're fortunate enough to have that one person in your life who's like such a strong influence, for me, it was my grandmother, called her Gaga, and she lived with just so much quiet dignity and grace and purpose. Like she would never write a mission statement or tell you what her purpose was. So she just lived it. I mean, everything she did, she was always helping people that literally couldn't speak, or, you know, people that were mute or people that were deaf. Or she was so devoted to the Jewish community. She was just gave back in every aspect of society, but she was very driven that every morning that you wake up is an opportunity to not only appreciate God's blessings, but to show your appreciation by helping others. And so I was very conscious, like, I need to have a mission, right? And so when I was leaving the nest, when I was 17 and coming out to San Diego, go to San Diego State, I remember driving cross country, and it would be great if I actually tell you what road stop it was or where I was, where I wrote it. But I have the piece of paper in my memory box where I scribbled on there what my personal mission statement was, like you said, to be a catalyst for positive change by educating and inspiring individuals and communities. And it has been an incredible guide since I started in San Diego volunteering. I remember I was on the board of Second Chance when I was 24 years old with Scott Silverman. And I was living downtown, and, you know, it was like living like right before even Horton Plaza, you know, before the whole gentrification of downtown, and really wanted to help the people on the streets to be able to have
Downtown doesn't look anything like it looks like now.
No, back
a few years ago. Yeah.
No. So it's been a great guide for me, and it's been a great anchor to always go back and say, hey, what am I doing right now? Am I living my mission?
So that was kind of like a divine intervention almost somewhere on the freeway. You just.
Yeah, actually, it's funny you say that when you say divine intervention. For me, I'm very spiritual. And so I will say literally I get downloads, right? Yep. And so when you mentioned that, like, I'm a master matchmaker, that's what my TEDx talk is about. Like, everybody can be a master matchmaker. But for me, it's I listen more intuitively. Like, when I meet someone, it doesn't always happen, but usually it'll say, oh my gosh, I know who you need to meet. And it's usually after listening to the person saying, well, where are you in your life and where do you want to be? whether it's something they want to achieve in business or they want to find a spouse or, you know, they're looking to make a major change in their life in terms of their health and quality of their lifestyle, it'll come to me. I'll literally get this download. And so, yeah, I think that was one of my very first downloads was like, you're here for a reason and this is your reason.
And go to school. Here you go. We're launching you off into this thing. Love that. You know, it's kind of interesting. I'm trying hard to be more of what you're describing, like be a little more conscious and aware and take space and time to actually hear, right?
To listen?
Yes.
Oh, I haven't trademarked.
Help me out with that okay. Right now, will you?
Yeah, I haven't trademarked this yet. Probably somebody else already has come up with it.
Just between you and me.
No. I don't care who owns it, but I want people to take this one on. I started saying it a lot. Your gut is God. Your gut is God, which means in your gut, you're talking to somebody and you're like, they are so going to screw me over in business. Like, I do not want to do business with this person. Or you go on a date with someone and like, I don't know what the red flags are, but I see them everywhere.
I feel it, yeah.
Yeah. Your gut talking to you is that sixth sense, is that divine intervention saying, listen to me, I'm trying to help you out here. So I'm trying to be more aware that like, when my gut's talking to me, listen to it. It's divine intervention. So if you like that, you need, you know, go with it. You know,
if I'm supposed to be a body person, so I'm supposed to be listening to my gut. My head keeps getting in the way. Apparently that's the problem I've got.
Well, there's the mind
somewhere between here and my gut.
There's the whole mind gut connection, which, you know, we've learned a lot more about, I think, in the last few years. And so in terms of your health, it's connected to your gut, but I think your gut is like, you also, as we learned, it's part of your brain too.
Yeah. So your heart's a big player in this whole thing too. I've gotten into some breath work lately and a lot of conversation about your heart and breathing into your heart and how waves come off your heart that go much further than anything else that are touching the people around you and all this. So I'm no expert in that.
Okay. I can learn from you too. This one I don't know. This
starting
is good.
To play with that a little bit. That's coming.
That's nice.
Yeah. Breathwork's a new thing for me. I've been enjoying that.
I try to use breathwork when I go to sleep at night and like the 4-2-4-2, but that's usually after this is a terrible confession. I'm sure you get all these great confessions on the podcast. So I'm, you know, a woman in my mid-50s, and so I'm very conscious of what I eat, right? And try not to eat sweets or desserts, you know, because like sugar is poison. So when I go to bed at night, I just sit there and I count all the things that I wish I could be eating. So I go through pies and
this
then
how
I
you
go
fall asleep at night.
Yeah. After I do my gratitude, I'm gratitude and grateful for my children. I'm grateful for this and then my loved one and everything. Then I go through pies and then cakes and then cookies and then candy.
Other things you're ungrateful for.
I can't have. And then if that doesn't work and I'm still awake, then I go do breath work.
Well, maybe you're teeing yourself up for dreams about it, right? So setting some seeds throughout the night, you're going to be eating a nice big piece of pie or something.
Yeah, but I feel really satisfied. I don't have sugar cravings, you know?
Perfect. Perfect. Well, I love the idea that you were able to really clearly succinct your mission statement like that. In my 40s, like midlife crisis, whatever, I probably went on a whole purpose pursuit. And I kept writing all these amazing big statements for purpose statements, all about how wonderful I am and all the things that make my life cool and how I enjoy my life kind of idea. And what flipped the switch for finding my purpose when I realized the purpose wasn't about me was really being an act of service, right? What are you bringing to the world for other people? Wasn't about me. So that was kind of the big defining moment for me. And also I was able to flip that around, which is what the book's about, the Jailbreak Leadership book that you got in front of you.
Oh, that's great. That's wonderful. So was there a moment for you that it was like an epiphany that you realized it was about serving others and not yourself?
Yes. I was actually on a retreat up in Montana and I was with a bunch of guys and something would happen and someone would just respond, right? With an act of service. And I just all of a sudden was observing that, like throughout the whole week, that there would be this consistency, you know, you always would do this thing and that person did that thing. And at the very end of the week, all of a sudden I did my thing. Like something happened, which I couldn't control myself. I was the least likely guy to be doing it in this group, but I was up in front of a group kind of facilitating. What are we going to do next? I wasn't even part of the group. I was like the one outsider. So all of a sudden the light bulb went on. I went, oh, this is your thing, right? When you do that thing, you just can't help yourself, right? It's your natural bent towards providing service to somebody.
It's interesting that you say that it was kind of like you observed it in others and then you saw that it was naturally in yourself. And then once it was turned on, you haven't been able to turn it off.
Right. Yeah. So my two-word purpose is mobilizing possibilities.
Yeah. So it's interesting. It's like there's, you know, I'm not a great person with quotes, but there's so many great quotes about, you know, like the more you give, the more you receive. And what I find frustrating is, you know, being someone who lives in a place of service and the consulting I do, a lot of it is fundraising, helping people raise money for, you know, whether it's their startups or their nonprofits. And that idea that there are some people who have not just had that, they have not had that realization. That either giving of themselves or giving of their money that they live in that mindset of scarcity where they're just not giving. Like they're just holding on to the sense of fear that like, it's not even conscious, right? And so this is the Conscious Curiosity podcast. If we can just be a little bit more conscious, right? And when people ask, like when I'm asking people all the time to give and to help me serve others, right? There's nothing oftentimes in return for me. I don't get anything in return.
Right.
And it's funny because like, if you're not inclined to give, if someone's asking you to give, you kind of bristle back, like, because you take offense knowing that you're a miser? Like you're not a giver, right? And if someone asks you to give and you're not a giver, it's like, you know, you get angry because in the end of the day, I think our souls want us to give because if you want,
that's our DNA, right?
That's in our DNA. And I think something happens in our lives that causes us to contract and to be fearful and to not give of our time and not give of our money and not even just give of our ears to listen to someone else. So my hope is that, you know, this great work that you're doing through your Jailbreak leadership, that you help people become more aware that when they're able to give, that then they're just blessed with so much more, right? Not just abundance, but the peace of knowing that your life matters because you're helping others.
Yeah. There's some Rami quote on that where they speak to like, I was looking for joy and then I found service and it turns out service is joy.
That's right? Very good. See, you're right? Breaking out the quotes. I wish I had well, them. I don't.
I'm sure I bastardized that a lot, yeah. But that's kind of the thought behind it. Well, that's kind of the whole part of the issue though. I think it's kind of our culture a little bit, right? I mean, we get so programmed that it's about getting, right? Take, take, take. You got to climb the ladder, get your stuff, get yours. That's what we got to break through. I think that's what kind of hits you in your 40s and midlife crisis. You go, I've been charging this hill for all these years. And it's not working. I need something different. So that's when people start to go, wait a minute, maybe there's more to life than that. So maybe that's when the shift happens. For some of us at 17, but you're a lucky one.
I don't know if that was when the shift happened. I think it was like, again, my grandmother led by example. Yes. And I wanted to make sure that my life was, you know, she was still alive and everything, but just make her proud, right?
Yeah.
And so it's also that. And it's also, for me, I'm very, very spiritual person, but I'm also a proud Jew. And as a Jew, I feel like the way I was raised and the way I educated being Jewish means you have a responsibility. The word is tikkun olam, which means, and it's so funny, I just watched the Mr. Rogers documentary. And after 9/11, they had him do a PSA. And obviously, Mr. Rogers is not Jewish. And he said, there is a concept called tikkun olam, which means to repair the world. And we all have a responsibility to make the world a little better than we found it. And so, you know, this concept, which is a Jewish concept, is a universal concept. But I take it as a Jew, I take it very personal as like a personal responsibility.
Mm, yeah. So I've actually been studying some Hinduism for the last year and a half, which has been kind of interesting. And one of the things that they kind of have these five things that I actually write down every day to remind myself of certain things. And one of them is you're a mother to the world. And what that means is we've all come out of this world. This building came out of this world, right? And we're all going to go back to this world. So you should really appreciate it as you're a mother, right? That just be loving to everything.
I like that.
Because we're all from the same thing. We're all from Earth, right?
Yeah, it's beautiful.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. Let's talk about matchmaking.
Okay.
How do you become a master matchmaker? Is there a school you get to go to? Or
no, what's that no, look yeah. Like? So in my TEDx talk, how to be a matchmaker in work, life, and love. For me to be a master matchmaker, number one rule is do not worry if the match is going to work.
Okay.
The idea is my belief, and I end my talk with this, if you connect two lives, you connect the world. And you hear this is very like, you know, business networking concept. Your network is your net worth, right? I don't have an insane network. However, it's just so happens whenever I sit down with someone, I just happen to know the one person they need to know that will change their lives and help them achieve their dreams. All of us have the ability to connect people and to help them just move their lives forward in whatever that is. It's like you meet a parent who has a child that was diagnosed with something. And you're like, you know, oh, I know someone whose child was diagnosed with this 5-10 years ago. Make the introduction. It costs nothing. And you're giving the opportunity for someone else to serve, right? Like I am an expert in very little things, but if I know people who have gifts and expertise and someone who needs it, it is a blessing to connect them. And so like, it's funny, I just posted on LinkedIn last night that a nonprofit that I've been the president of the board for many years, we just finished a massive merger where a large nonprofit acquired us, right? We call it a merger, but it was an acquisition, right? And I wrote at the end of the LinkedIn post, I literally wrote, P.S. If you need an attorney to help you guide you on a nonprofit merger, let me know. Because I was so impressed with the attorney who helped navigate this, right? I've done so many M&A deals in the tech world, and I know great M&A attorneys for that. An M&A attorney for nonprofit mergers, I put that out there because of like, I want to pay it forward.
Yeah.
Right. So if there's someone in your life that's like been a healer to you, like I found Dr. Lou, LIU, this amazing acupuncturist who takes everybody's health insurance, which is great. And he's on Miramar Road. And so whenever I hear anybody complain with something that I know that he treats, I'm like, oh my gosh.
I got a guy for you.
I got a guy. This is what I have in my TEDx talk. I got a guy. So like, gotta go see Dr. Lou. So if somebody has helped you, right? Think about that. Now you have that person. You hear somebody else, you just can be conscious. It's all about this conscious curiosity.
Being conscious.
Conscious. Yeah. Oh, I know someone who could help you even more with that, right? And then as the most fun matchmaking, of course, is romantic matchmaking. And thank God, I have 14 couples that have gotten married.
Uh-oh.
Yep. And through my
matching. That's a pretty high betting average.
Well, come on. I've been doing a long time. So I'm not telling you the hundreds that I've introduced that did not work. And I don't charge for that. Again, that's like all the matchmaking is God's work. But like if you meet somebody who's single and is a really great person, say, are you looking for someone? You know, and they'll say, oh my gosh, you have somebody for me? You're like, no, but I just.
What are you looking for?
You know, what are you looking for, right? Allow them the space to vocalize that.
They might not have even done that yet.
Right. I mean, part of it, I've been in coming out of Texas. I've been in, been in California so long. I've gotten so woo-woo here, but I do believe like you have to voice it, right? You got to put it out into the universe. And the way it's gone for me for the romantic matches that I've made is I allow someone to say what they're looking for. And then I just randomly meet that person and go, I've literally, picked up people at a bar and said, I know your future wife. Let me show you her picture, right? Like, cause it's just like the download is after I've talked to them, whatever. So it's really when you're meeting someone who's trying to grow their business or trying to build their life, or they're trying to change their life, they're trying to get healthier physically, spiritually, whatever it is. You know, if you hear somebody who's striving for something, be a loving witness for that and just organically, naturally think, is there anyone I know who could help them on their journey? And just make the introduction. I try to do it in real time, like on my phone, because if I promise to do it later, like I'll forget,
might not happen, yeah.
Yeah, I try to do it like real time. And the funny thing is that now I have that reputation. And so I get random questions of, do you know anyone that can help me with this from people I've never met and I'll never meet. And there'll be some random message on social media. And, if I can help them, I can help them. Like there's a concept in Judaism that says, my grandmother taught me this, run to do a mitzvah. So a mitzvah is a good deed. So if there's an opportunity to do a good deed, right? And it's been offered to you, just do it, right? So yeah, so I've helped like the most random one I had was on social media. Someone posted, I'm getting married and I need Jewish witnesses. You need a witness to the wedding, right? And to sign the Jewish wedding contract. And someone tagged me on a post saying, oh, Audrey Jacobs knows everybody. She can help you. So I'm messaging with this woman who I'll never meet. I'm not going to go to the wedding. And I'm like, okay, I'll help you find some witnesses for your wedding. Like, boom, So it's just very inexpensive. And it is so rewarding because I know the connections I've made over the years have not only built families, but have built businesses, have created deep friendships, have started movements. And the most beautiful thing is most of the people don't remember, the ones that got married do, but most of them don't remember how they met.
Oh,
and it's
really?
Like, it's truly like doing God's work because I'm literally just a vessel to put them together. It's like the be a catalyst for positive change. I'm just the spark. Yeah. And then the fire is ignited and it burns. And
it's not on you, right?
Yeah.
Works or doesn't work, that's not me. My job
is just- It can't be an ego thing.
Yes.
It can't be an ego thing. It's just about connecting people. And you make the person you connect feel valued, feel seen, feel heard. And the person that you're connecting them with feel value because, oh, you see that I'm, you know, have something to offer. So it's a beautiful, beautiful way to engage in the world.
What I'm hearing, back to kind of the idea of consciousness or whatever presence might be another word one would use, is you're like, you're there. You're not, you're actually in the conversation. You're curious. You want to know. You're paying attention to things here. I think that's part of our problem in the world is we're just kind of all flying by. I mean, it's kind of the idea, you know, consciousness is the key to everything, I think. I remember being a big fan of the 7 Habits of Effective People.
Yeah.
It's been around for like 30 years or something. I think I read the book multiple times before I really figured it out. Like, you know, it had all these great things you should be doing, but it had to do with this whole idea that all those things were just to be, if you're conscious, you had this moment to make a decision, habit, or am I going to do something out of the 7 habits, right? And so that it's about the moment, is being conscious of the moment, shutting your habits off. And that's just the game changer. Because I think we're wired to operate our habits and some habits are good and some habits aren't so good. So part of what you're describing is being really present, conscious to the moment.
I think of consciousness when you're engaging with someone else is, for me, it's 3 modes of listening. Okay. And it's you know, it's hard to do 2 things at once, 3 at once. But when I'm in someone's presence and then I'm listening to them, I'm listening to their words, number one. I'm also listening to the words they don't say. So I'm listening to the silence because when someone's saying something, there's a lot they're not saying as well. Mm. Okay. And then I'm listening to their body and their energy. Right. And so I try to hear them in 3 different ways.
You have an example of like maybe a conversation, what that looks like?
I mean, it's interesting. I'm the TEDx San Diego curator.
Which you want to talk about, by the way.
We'll talk about
before
that.
Before we get out of here.
And so I interview a lot of people. And when I interview them, you know, to see if they have a TEDx.
That's something they really want to put out in the world.
It's so funny that they don't know I'm listening not only to the words they say, but I'm listening to what they're not saying, which is they're telling you their idea we're sharing, but they're not telling you the pain that they went through to come to that revelation. Mm. So I'm hearing the story without knowing exactly what it is. Oh my gosh, you went through hell to come to that. And then I'm also listening to their energy that, like, when I feel that the reason they have to tell this story is because that they realized that if they did not tell this story, that it would have been all for naught that they had suffered like they suffered. Right. So
almost turning it into a service, right?
And it's, yeah.
I need to offer this up for other people.
So, for example, yesterday I had the TEDx San Diego Salon, where I filmed without a live audience, but then we had a salon discussion afterwards. I had 8 speakers. And one of the speakers, Vishon Charney, her talk was about the F word, about fertility, and the idea that we need to reframe our thinking about fertility and discuss it. And when women need to understand their fertility and how delicate it is, and to be unapologetic about protecting it and embracing it. And, you know, if you're getting older and not protecting yourself and having, you know, protecting your fertility so you could have children later on, you know, there's so many things we don't discuss. And when she first pitched me on her idea, and she was a fertility attorney, like, she was just telling me her idea, but I could tell that there was some
very fact-based stuff.
Yes. Like, there was so much she wasn't saying about her own story and her own trauma of what she had gone through to have her own fertility law firm, right? And I could also just like feel like the words she wasn't saying. And then energetically, it was absolutely her life's work. Like, she had to get this message out to the world. It was, so it's like that energetic body was a word she wasn't saying and the word she was saying. And so when she gave her talk yesterday, she talked about how when she was in her 20s, she was diagnosed with cancer. She'd like a month out of law school and was told, okay, well, you're going to have chemo and radiation and probably not be able to have children again, and wanted to go get her eggs frozen. Insurance was going to pay for it. And it was absolutely devastating to her and just like ruined her. And she, you know, was in law school debt, and she had tried to go find the money to save her eggs because the most important thing to her was to be able to have a family. Now I have to find her a husband. She's beautiful. It's wonderful. God willing.
It's a full turnkey project.
Yeah, I'm working.
Do it's a TED part, talk, get married.
Yeah, you know, it's not. It's all volunteer thing, running a TEDx talk, being the curator. And I don't guarantee that I'm going to find you a husband or a wife. But anyway, when she gave her talk yesterday, after I had first listened to her, I was able to help her cultivate and actually to actually speak on all three levels that I listened to her on. Mm-hmm. And so that consciousness, when you're with someone, you know, oftentimes you're listening to someone and you're thinking about what you have to do next, right? If we could actually listen to people on those three levels, listen to the words they're saying, to the words they're not saying, and then what's their body, their energy saying, right?
Yeah, you got to be fully present in the conversation.
Yeah, that's just leveling it up. That's consciousness at the highest level. And I will tell you, like, it's everything they always say, it's a practice. Yeah, it's a practice. You have to be very, you know, work on this level of listening, but it is something that I'm working really hard at getting better at.
Do you do other practices outside the listening piece to try and enhance, like meditation or other things to ramp up your abilities to be fully present?
I am a journaler. Writing is my art form, and I have not been writing. I literally...
Bad girl.
No, I am not a bad girl, because you know what I just did? I just bought a one-way ticket to San Miguel de Allende. I'm going to go stay at my friend's house, and I'm taking...
You're going to go do it.
And I'm going to give myself a solo writing retreat, because I have a column in the LA Jewish Journal, and I haven't written anything in a while, and I need to go write, and maybe I'll go write my next TEDx talk myself or start a book. Who knows? But writing is my art form, and I need to write. So that's one of my practices, but I do journal every day. Meditation, I try to meditate. I can admit I don't do it often, but as long as breath work, after I think about what I want to eat, what cake I want to eat at night, then I will do my breath work to go to sleep. But you know, the best meditation, I will tell you, is a pet. And I have a rescue galgo, which is a Spanish greyhound. And Zari runs like 45 miles an hour, and taking her to Dog Beach and watching her run is the greatest form of being present and peaceful. And like, you cannot help but smile when you see a spirit doing what they were meant to do.
Yes.
Right. Like one of the TEDx talks I just produced in the last show I had was with Bing Bush, when he talked about beyond the finish line, about the bond between horses and humans. And he races thoroughbreds. He says, these horses, they love to run. They love to run. That's what they love to do. And so when I watch my dog run, she loves to run. And that just brings me joy. Like, you know, I could listen to meditation, but I am not going to smile the way I do ear to ear when I see her, you know.
Right.
It's very much like, no other dog can run as fast as my dog. You know, there's a little bit of that going on, you know, and I love like everybody, like their heads turning going, wow, you know, that's a little bit fun too, but mostly it's just watching something, an animal, a spirit doing what it was meant to do.
So great when we get to see people do that as well. Right.
And that's why I love TEDx, is like, if I can find those people who have their life's work to actually help them cultivate and crystallize that message that goes out to the world. That is, oh my gosh, I'm so fortunate.
So how did you land this gig? How did that come?
How did I land a volunteer gig?
Yeah, there you go.
It takes so much time. It's such a great story, and it's such a true story. And you can ask Jack Abbott. So Rancho La Puerta, which is the world's first wellness resort, which is in Tecate, Mexico, right? Just across the border. Created by Debbie Celeski. I'm going to say her name wrong. She's like over 100. She still has an orientation that she runs every Wednesday night there. You know, wow. It's an amazing, amazing wellness resort. They have like 70 health and wellness classes a day.
She's the matriarch of the
whole matriarch.
Thing.
Yeah. That's a, yeah. She and her
live
husband.
Live your life appropriately. You can look like that.
Yeah. 100%.
Yeah.
So during COVID, I was trying to organize a retreat, and you know, Mexico is a little bit less restricted.
Few different rules.
Yeah. And so I went down there to like, see, oh, organize a retreat. And Rancho La Puerta is at the base of a sacred mountain. And I saw this man, and like, literally, I don't think I can ever say this about anybody else. Literally, I could see his aura, his light around him. And I walked up to him and I said, who are you? Can I be your friend? Which I've done many times in my life to people. Random. Some people get scared. But he smiled. I mean, that was Jack Abbott, who founded TEDx San Diego, one of the very first independent TEDx events in the world. He got the license. And we became friends. And for like 6 months, we were like getting together and just chatting. He had like, he was on a six startup, and I, you know, and I was a startup investor. And he didn't tell me till like 6 months after getting together for coffee and stuff that, by the way, that he, you know, was the, had founded TEDx San Diego and he was running it. And I was like, oh my gosh, I love TEDx. Like I gave a TEDx talk in 2018 and it was like one of the most amazing journeys for me because it's helped me crystallize who am I? I am a master matchmaker and how I give back to the world. I go, I want anything I can do to support you. I will support you. And I remember like a couple of weeks later, he had an event coming up, TEDx event coming up. And I was on a plane again, download. I get a download from the divine, reach out to Jack Abbott. And so I messaged him on Facebook Messenger. I was on the plane. I said, Jack, is everything okay with TEDx San Diego? Just checking in. He's like, oh my gosh, we just lost our headline sponsor for our show. I said, I'm in. I got you. At the time, as a financial advisor at Bernstein Private Wealth. And I can tell you this story now because I no longer work there. I still love them and very much. And they are a TEDx San Diego sponsor, but continue to be after
they
what
weren't,
I,
they weren't until no, that day.
I promised him. I said, how much do you need? He said 15,000 to be the headline sponsor. I'm like, sure, no problem. Of course, without again, this, remember, this is a $700 million wealth management firm. There are processes. You must get things approved. I said, yes, without checking with anyone. I can't
imagine you doing that.
Oh yeah. Kind of living by forgiveness instead of asking for permission. Thank God I was able to sell. What an incredible opportunity will be to be able to invite our clients and our prospective clients to this very prestigious event for this world-renowned brand. And actually they did see the value of it and it really was incredible. And so Bernstein Private Wealth was a sponsor. And at the event, I didn't realize it was a retirement event for him. It was the last show after running it for since 2010. This was in 2022. And at the VIP after party, I spoke with them and talked about, so what's the succession plan? He said, we're having a conversation right now. Let's have this conversation. And so he guided me and with his blessing, and I think we just talked again, I think like 2-3 days ago, he is still my spiritual TEDx guru guide. I was very fortunate to take over TEDx San Diego as a volunteer. And, you know, he had done so much for TEDx San Diego to build a brand globally. It's one of the most prestigious TEDx's in the world. And I was very intimidated to take on the role of curator and to protect the brand. But I had to come in and say, what was I going to do different? And the thing that I decided to do different is when I do a live show with a live audience, that it is all about San Diego. Mm. It is about finding the ideas that are coming out of San Diego that can change the world, that can heal the world, and the people behind those ideas. And how, by any means necessary, and a lot of it is divine intervention, how I find people, and then exporting those ideas to the global stage and really highlighting that San Diego is where it's at, right? And so then the events, the TEDx San Diego events, then become a celebration of community. In that the diversity of the people on that stage is I try to get diversity. So I have tribes represented from all different communities. I want people to meet and connect with each other who not only the little cohort that I build with each show, then, you know, the 9 speakers and the different performing artists, I want them to be ideally people that they would never meet.
Yes.
And I want them to become a family and then extend that experience into the audience where it's each one of them are bringing their tribe. And then we have this, you know, mixture of tribes and communities all together to celebrate, you know, San Diego voices and ideas that change the world.
And you're talking my language here. That's kind of the concept behind this whole podcast, right? I mean, you have to be from San Diego to be on this podcast. That's the whole goal, right? And it came, was rooted in the fact that you start with conscious capitalism and we were interviewing people in Zoom meetings for, you know, chapter meetings or whatever from Texas and Boston, whatever. Why are we talking to these people? So the whole philosophy is yeah, let's talk to local San Diego business leaders and talk about how can this be a community and how can we change the community of San Diego as business leaders? So love that. We're on the same page here.
That's wonderful.
Since you're the master matchmaker, you're going to have to give me some guidance on how to ramp this thing up over here. Love it.
I know. I think you've done an amazing job with your podcast, Jeff. And I mean, you had 80 episodes and the people that you've brought on. You're doing great. But I mean, the thing is, it's always asking ask every single guest to suggest another guest. That's one thing. Like, that's
actually how you got here.
Yeah, that's how I got here.
Through Delinda.
Delinda is amazing. She was one of the co-sponsors last night of my TEDx San Diego Salon. She is a new friend. I will tell you, if she's listening to this, when I first...
She will now. Linda, you're on the show.
You know, there are some people you just look at and go, wow, they're just so incredible. I'm so intimidated. Like, oh my God, she's so accomplished and she's so kind and she's so beautiful and she's so poised. And I was too intimidated to literally like reach out to her. And so
you,
me, I was, I know I can always like whip out a curator of TEDx San Diego. They can like hide behind that. But there are some people that truly shine brightly and Delinda is one of them. So in terms of any network in life that you're trying to build, you're trying to grow, anyone who's in your network, you ask them for an introduction to someone else. You know, that's very, just one, just one.
Yeah. I felt good the day you were talking about connecting. So I facilitate a little networking group with some guys. And one of the guys in there reached out to me and said, Jeff, I got a friend that has like, she's doing something in the addiction world or whatever. And she wants to create an app. So I had a guest on the show back a while ago, Sylvester Raymond, who that's what he does. He helps people develop their apps. He's actually an investor and all this kind of has a whole process. I go, oh, I got just the guy. And what I said was,
there you go.
So I said, listen to the podcast.
Great.
And after you listen to the podcast, then reach back out to me. And if you want that connection, I'll make that happen. So apparently it happened because Sylvester called me just before I was coming here to say, hey, thanks for the connection.
You know, that's not so important that you say that. I have two things I want to share on that. So in my TEDx talk, I say one of the most important things is to thank the matchmaker. You know, if the match works out, if you get the investment in your company, if you get the client, you know, if you start dating that person or whatever it is, thank the matchmaker. Right. Gratitude is important. People make matches not because of the gratitude, but it's truly fulfilling when you know that it works out.
Yeah, it made me feel good.
It made you feel good 100%. The other thing is that I have my personal mission statement, but I also, when I started running my own businesses and building teams, I created my three rules of life, you know, which are more like, you know, three rules, more business. And one of them relates to asking for introductions. And my staff, when I was running Art Crowd, they had it burnt, my three rules of life, on a piece of wood. And now like I have an altar at home and it's like, you know, the backdrop of the altar. And so my three rules, you ready for my three rules of life, Jeff?
I'm ready.
Okay. All right. Number one. And my kids know this. I always ask my kids.
Have you been writing this down or what?
Yeah, I should be writing this down. My kids know this. This is like, you know, they must know this. Number one, if you don't ask, you don't get. Very, very simple. You don't ask, you don't get.
So true.
Gotta ask for everything. And don't be apologetic when you're asking for something. Just ask. Don't ask, don't get. Number one. Number two, never take no for an answer. Now, that sounds kind of extreme. Never take no for an answer. It has an and. Never take no for an answer. The and is, if you get a no, you get an N-O, you ask that person for a K-N-O-W, for a no. Who do you know who would say yes? Okay. So don't ask, you don't get. Never take no for an answer. You get the no. Who do you know would say yes? And then the third one is F fear. So I'm not gonna drop the F bomb on your podcast, but F fear. So for me, like, it's so funny. I don't know how many times this week I've been pitched on a TEDx talk on being a fearless leader. So many things about fear. I get pitched all the time on different TEDx talks around fear. Because I think it's really one of the biggest things in life.
Well, it keeps us from doing things that we should be doing or wanting to do, right?
Yeah, but it gets in the way. I mean, I think I'm quote unquote fearless because I don't really think so much about what's going to go wrong. You know, I would never be a good risk adjuster at all. Maybe I won't have my kids listen to this podcast, but anyway. Yeah. There you go. So those are the three rules of life.
I mean, the fearless things, like when I think of all the people I know in the world, I kind of know two people I've kind of put in that category saying these are fearless people just based on how they live their lives.
Only one. Two?
Two, yeah.
Okay, who are the two people that are fearless?
My bar is like really high.
Wow.
One's my buddy Damien and the other one's my wife.
I love that.
My wife is fearless.
I love your wife. That's
and
great.
And she says, well, it doesn't mean I don't get nervous to do things, but she just plunges into things. It's like, yeah, she's...
Yeah, I mean, look, things are going to go wrong and mistakes are going to happen no matter what you do, right? And for me, I believe it's all in God's hands. So we have free will. God knows what we're going to do.
That's how you take the fear factor away. It's not about me. I'm not in charge.
No,
the big guy's got me here.
Yeah,
right?
100%. Yeah. What do I have on my bulletin board? I wrote, you've got this because God's got you. I wrote that, I think, last week because, yeah, I don't worry because I know it's all in God's hands, whatever happens. So it's such a relief. I just produced a TEDx talk about a guy who's an atheist who says he thinks people who believe in God are happier. And it was like, like, I listen to it. I'm like, I have to be really objective on this one, you know, because like, you know, I bring someone who's so God-centered and like, you know, for me to like, to support a talk on atheism. Right. But he literally said like, people who believe in God don't really worry so much. I'm like, yeah, you got it. You know? So
turn it over, let go, let
turning
go.
Turning it out. Yeah. Yep.
Well, we got to put a bow on this, Audrey.
Oh my gosh. Amazing.
The big final question. What's the big idea? So of all the things we talked about, what's like the one thing you want people to remember?
What is the one thing I want people to remember? To fully listen when you're connecting with another person. Talked about those three ways to listen. Listen to the words you hear, the words that are not said, and they're the words you're conveyed through their energy and the body. Fully listen. And because we all need to be heard.
Boy, I love that. I love that. That is a great message. You did a great job in the show of really articulating that as well, too. So
thank you.
Thank you for all the amazing work you're doing and connecting everybody together. And we're going to talk more about how we're going to make San Diego the place.
Okay.
We have that opportunity.
We do. Yeah, I'm very fortunate that I'm able to do that.
Well, that's our show for today. And if you enjoyed it, please subscribe, comment, and most importantly, share the podcast with a friend. Again, special thanks to our collaborative community of San Diego business organizations, the Better Business Bureau, Conscious Capitalism, Be Local, Business for Good, and Cause San Diego. We're all using the influence of business to positively impact our very own community of San Diego. I'm Jeff Blanton from Jailbreak Leadership saying, until next time, go do what you do. Go do what you do best, for we're all counting on you.